World Cup Talk. Christina here with the storylines that matter most in football today. Morocco's World Cup opener suddenly feels a lot more dangerous. And not because Brazil changed anything overnight, it's because Morocco did. Multiple reports across the last day point to real injury disruption, with Reuters and Sportstar both focusing on late enforced changes ahead of that opening test. That matters because Morocco were supposed to arrive as one of the tournament's most organized, hardest-to-break teams. When injuries start hitting the spine or the defensive balance right before a heavyweight match, the conversation changes from whether an underdog can spring a surprise to whether it can still play its own game. And for me, that is the most interesting World Cup story of the day. Not just who is hurt, but how little time elite national teams have to rebuild chemistry when the clock is already running. What makes this bigger than one team bulletin is the trend underneath it. This opening stretch of the World Cup already feels like a stress test of squad depth. We've now seen injury headlines around Morocco, around Japan with reports that captain Wataru Endo is out, and around Argentina after the Balerdi issue forced a squad adjustment. In club football, you can patch a problem over 3 or 4 weeks and hide it with system repetition. In a World Cup, every training session matters, every partnership matters, and one missing player can reshape the emotional temperature of a camp. You can almost hear the coaching staffs recalculating. Who can still press? Who can cover space? Who can stay brave on the ball? Who suddenly has to play within himself? Staying with Morocco for a second, what I'll be watching is whether the injuries change ambition as much as personnel. Against Brazil, the temptation is obvious. Drop deeper, protect the weak spots, survive waves of pressure, and hope the match stays tense. But the teams that trouble Brazil are usually the ones brave enough to choose moments, not just endure them. So if Morocco's absences reduce their ability to spring forward or defend transitions cleanly, that's not just a lineup note. It changes the tactical identity of the game, and for neutral listeners, it changes the kind of drama we may get. The second thread worth talking about is Japan. Because if the reports around Endo are accurate, that is not a routine injury item. That is a captain, a rhythm player, a stabilizer, and in many ways, the emotional center of the side. Olympics.com and ETV Bharat both framed it as a major blow, and even allowing for the need to treat fast-moving tournament coverage carefully, the broader point is clear. When a team loses its midfield organizer, it loses more than ball winning. It loses timing. It loses calm. It loses the player who tells the match what pace to breathe at. Japan usually looks strongest when they can compress space, recycle possession quickly, and make smart decisions before the game turns frantic. Without a player like Endo, the burden shifts immediately to structure and collective discipline. And that's why I think Japan's situation matters far beyond one roster note. We tend to talk about superstar absences because they are easy to visualize, the missing goals, the missing highlights, the missing celebrity. But tournament football is often decided by the players who make the whole system coherent. The midfielder who closes the lane half a second earlier. The captain who settles a nervous first 10 minutes. The experienced voice who prevents a chaotic spell from becoming a collapse. If Japan are forced to reinvent that role on the fly, we learn something important about their maturity as a team. Then there's Argentina, where the story is less panic and more adaptation. The reporting around Marco Senesi coming in after the Balerdi injury suggests a champion responding the way champions usually do, quickly, clinically, and without public drama. That is one of the quiet advantages of top tournament nations. They don't just have talent, they have replacement logic. They already know the next option, the next profile, the next partnership. It doesn't mean the injury is meaningless. It means the damage is managed better. For Argentina, that stability is part of the aura. Opponents look across and see a team that rarely appears rattled by bad news. What I find interesting, though, is that even efficient squad management has a subtle cost. You can replace a player on paper much faster than you replace familiarity under pressure. In knockout football especially, the details become emotional before they become tactical. Does the new defender trust the timing of the fullback next to him? Does the rest of the back line instinctively know how aggressive to be? Can the team keep its attacking shape if it is just slightly less secure behind the ball? These are tiny questions until they suddenly decide huge matches. Now let's zoom out to the host side and fan side picture, because not every great World Cup podcast topic has to come from a team sheet. One of the more telling discussions in the last 24 hours has been about the match day experience itself. Empty seats in Guadalajara, noted in live coverage from The Guardian, fan guidance pieces around Miami, and ticketing explainers for Canadian venues. Put those together and you get a more interesting story than any one headline. The World Cup is not just managing football pressure, it is managing scale. Ticket access, transport flow, stadium entry, local information, and pricing all shape the mood that television can only partly capture. The empty seat discussion is especially worth watching because it sits right at the intersection of optics and reality. A packed stadium on television sells inevitability. A stadium with visible gaps invites questions immediately. Are prices too high? Are kickoff times awkward? Is local transport difficult? Are resale systems confusing? Are fans being priced into selective attendance instead of full commitment? None of those questions can be answered by one image alone, but they matter because this tournament is spread across huge geographies. The 2026 World Cup was always going to test whether football's biggest event can still feel local inside a continental-scale operation. That connects nicely to another fan-facing story getting traction: promotions and travel-linked packages, including reports about Airbnb offering ticket-related incentives with select stays across host cities. On the surface, that sounds fun and modern. And maybe for some supporters, it genuinely helps. But it also underlines a bigger truth about this World Cup. Fandom is being bundled. Travel, hospitality, accommodation, ticket access, and branded experiences are increasingly sold together. For organizers and partners, that is smart business. For regular supporters, it raises a tougher question. Does the World Cup still feel like a football tournament first? Or is it becoming a premium event where the smoothest path belongs to people who can buy the whole package? And I don't say that as nostalgia for some imaginary pure past. Major tournaments have always had commercial layers. The difference now is how visible and personalized the offers are. Fans are not just being invited to attend. They are being segmented, targeted, upsold, and guided through an ecosystem. That can improve convenience, but it can also widen the gap between the supporters who create atmosphere and the consumers who purchase access. If that balance shifts too far, the tournament risks looking polished while sounding a little hollow. One more thing before I go. The first day or two of a World Cup can make us overreact to whatever is loudest. One injury bulletin, one crowd photo, one winning start, one tactical surprise, and suddenly it feels like the whole event has revealed its truth. It hasn't. But these early signals do matter because they tell us where pressure is accumulating. Right now, that pressure sits in three places. On squads trying to absorb late injuries without losing identity. On organizers trying to deliver a smooth, convincing fan experience across multiple cities, and on supporters trying to navigate a tournament that is thrilling, massive, and sometimes expensive in ways that are impossible to ignore. So today, if you want the shortest version of the story, it's this. The World Cup has opened with the football already being shaped by fragility and the spectacle already being judged by logistics. Morocco's injuries give us the sharpest competitive tension. Japan and Argentina remind us that squad news is really a story about structure and trust. And the ticketing, travel, and attendance conversation reminds us that the feeling of a World Cup is built outside the touchline, too. See you tomorrow.